sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome here to the Sunbury Motors Studio, Force Rated Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, key routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. How heartbroken are you going to be if Troy Polamalu gets released by the Steelers this year?
Oh, that! Why would they release him? He's not playing bad. I mean, he's actually been in a part of a lot of plays this year. Why would they release him? Why do you start rumors?
Well, okay. Well, let's get a viewpoint on the Steelers. Our go-to guy of late has been Neil Kulong from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Bring in Neil. Neil, Kevin welcomes you. He loves hearing Kevin. Tell Neil you love Steeler Insight.
I love Steeler Insight.
Here we go. Neil's going to be writing a book, aren't you, Neil?
Yeah, you know, I had thought about it. We're still kind of early in the game, production-wise, but putting together the pitch and... from there, I guess we'll kind of go the author's route, however it is that that goes, and see if anyone wants to publish a book from a hack like myself.
It's a J-O-N-E-S if you want to include any. Okay, fine. What did we see on Sunday, especially in the second half? What did you sit back and say, okay, that's different?
Yeah, it was just a vastly different look at it from one half to the other. I mean, the second half looked a lot more traditional, if that's the right word for it, a defensive approach from the Steelers. In the first half, it looked like they were running a lot more man coverage, sort of trying to get a blitz going to get into Matthew Stafford's face before he had a chance to get the ball downfield. It worked early in the first half, but then it all broke loose down the end, and Calvin Johnson turned into Calvin Johnson. And you know, they still managed to weather the storm, though. In the second half, they really took over and played some great defensive football.
No question. But in the first half, they set a tone offensively. What did you like about that?
It was the tempo of it, I think, more than anything else. If you have that 11 personnel, which I think that the Steelers really do, the three wide receiver look, it increases the team's ability to be a lot more versatile in their offensive approach. And a lot of what they did, I mean, no huddle aside, and people, you know, we want to talk about that. More than anything else, to me, it seemed like they didn't want to use the two tight end look, the fullback look, like they have many times throughout Todd Haley's tenure in Pittsburgh. It really looked like they wanted to maximize their athleticism and get to that point Emmanuel Sanders on the field until he got hurt, and then it was Marcus Wheaton. But the three receiver look, especially with a tight end that's as versatile as Heath Miller, there are a lot of different things that they can go into, and when they use a no huddle look, Roethlisberger under center, especially out of the shotgun, can see those things and change the play in the direction that he wants it to go. I think I made it a lot harder for the Lions to get a read on what they were doing, and they jumped all over them right away with it, held on to it for the rest of the game. And, you know, the thing with the no huddle, it comes and goes, and they picked it up at the end when they needed to and pulled away.
Can the Steelers season now be decided within a 5-day span?
I think it's going to. This is really the key thing. I mean, it's nice for the team to be a game back in the wild card and what looks to be a very even, if not mediocre, run for that last playoff seed. But it's really going to come down to their ability to perform well in these games, to stay healthy in these games, and ultimately win them. I don't think that they have another game that they're going to be able to lose. Just for the sake of preparation, but I said that when they were 0-4 too. So you just don't know. I mean, when it's a team, you're looking at the Jets, you're looking at Miami, you're looking at you know, Pittsburgh's in there as well, obviously, Cleveland, Baltimore. One of these teams has to separate at some point here, and none of them have been able to do that to this point. So it's really kind of come down to a 6-game season. And in that, I don't know if the Steelers are top to bottom better than all those other teams, but they're going to face all of them. You know, you got two against Cleveland, you've got one against Baltimore, one against Miami, the road game at Green Bay, and one at home against Cincinnati. I mean, that's a tough stretch of opponents for a team that at absolute worst has to win 5 of 6, and they haven't put more than two together in a row yet this year. So their work's cut out for them, that's for sure.
Well, they have Cleveland coming up and then Baltimore on Thanksgiving night. So what do we see really the Steelers' hopes in those two games and back-to-back as to what they can put themselves in a position or out of position based on those two games?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's never easy winning in Baltimore, even with the dramatic win that they had with Charlie Batch under center last year. It's never a gimme to think that you can walk into Baltimore and walk out with a win. Cleveland is a much better team as well. I think these are you know the two toughest games that they will see this season. Not against a team from New England. They're two very good opponents. They know each other particularly well. So looking at that, they're even matchups. But as cliche as it is, I think it really just kind of comes down to the better team's going to win. And I really don't know who that is right now. And both of them, they have to pretty much win out their games as well if they're going to have a postseason spot. So a lot to play for, and it's a tough slate. I think we're going to see Pittsburgh in a much better position heading into these games than they were last year or even earlier this season. So they've got more to play for, and you hope that that'll translate into a better performance.
What's the confidence level of this team like compared to a month ago?
I think it's got to be much higher. I mean, you look at them, especially offensively, getting back to that tempo that I had mentioned earlier. They had kind of peaks and valleys as far as their offensive production went, and overall, I'd say it was a pretty good game for them. But they still left a lot out on the field, and I think you saw that in post game interviews. A lot of them were talking about that. They haven't reached their highest level offensively yet. Now, granted, from where they started, they look like the 07 Patriots right now. I mean, it's a work in progress. It's growing. It's building. But they're still missing components to what they were doing. I think they have to be confident, but you know the sense of urgency needs to be there now. They need to finally put this together instead of talking about it or having you know 6 or 7 quarters of good football. They need to put this together for 6 games if they're going to have a chance.
What you know, we talked about what Antonio Brown does. What has Jericho Cotchery meant?
I think Cotchery is to me in comparison to last year, he looks much more comfortable. He's running sharper routes, and it seems like last year, I don't know if this makes any sense or not, but it almost seems like he's not looking back for the ball until he needs to. And to me, that's more of an awareness issue. It's more of a comfort issue. He's used to his quarterback more, and they're using him to a high level. Teams are really trying to clamp down on Brown, and for understandable reasons. I mean, he leads the NFL in receptions. The touchdown that Cotchery scored was set up almost entirely just because of Antonio Brown, as well as the team's penchant to throw receiver screens. It was a pump pass to that, and Cotchery just ran a simple wheel route right down, and the Lions bit on the fake really badly. I mean, he was wide open. And having a player that can still produce and can still, you know, run very crisp, clean routes like that really works when you're in a rhythm passing game, which is what the Steelers were doing against Detroit. Overall, the presence that he has just as a veteran, I think that means a ton to what's still, you know, a fairly young passing team. You know, they don't have a whole lot of experience on the offensive side of the ball, top to bottom, the offensive line, the depth at the receiver position. There's not a whole lot of guys that have been through it all the way Cotchery has, and this is why, you know, a big part of the reason why, at least, he's setting career numbers now. And he's a free agent this offseason, so you know he's making himself some money in the process.
This is the oldest defense on average age in the NFL, and also has more players over the age of 32 than any team in the NFL that's actively participating, whether it's in primary or sub packages. Is in the offseason, I know we're not there yet because you have to play the rest of this thing out, but do they start thinking about how do we now transform this defense because of age and what's the best route, free agency or the draft?
You know, I think where they are right now, they asked that question themselves last year, and a lot of it was going to be predicated on their success to whatever end they can get away with the older/younger players that they have in right now. A player like Vince Williams is really young. He's probably not even supposed to be playing. He filled in for Larry Foote, who's, you know, one of those old players. He's played, what, three quarters of the first game this season. Williams came in, and Williams barely plays now. They've got Troy Polamalu basically playing an inside linebacker position more and more, and you saw Jarvis Jones kind of playing that position a little bit against Detroit. It's an old team right now. I think heading into the offseason, a lot of those players are going to be gone. I don't get a real good feeling that Polamalu is going to be back. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Ike Taylor. He's got a real high cap number. It could be a situation in which they just gut the older players and try to get a lot younger. But at the same time, there are a lot of young guys that play on this team as well. I mean, there are older guys that are there, but you still have, you know, you're Steve McClendon in the middle. He's 27 years old. Jarvis Jones sees significant times for him. He's 23. Shamarco Thomas has been their nickelback up until he got injured. He's 23 years old. Right. Cortez Allen's only 25. To me, on the defensive side of the ball, more of their issues have been from the younger players as opposed to the older ones. You know, Ike Taylor is still a serviceable cornerback. I mean, you know, I don't know a whole lot of guys that can cover Calvin Johnson the way that as big as he is, as fast as he is, he's not an easy matchup for anybody, regardless of what their age is. So there are a lot of things that they're going to need to do. I think you're probably going to see both safeties gone next year, just my guess right now. Ryan Clark won't be back. Troy Polamalu probably will be a cap casualty. It wouldn't surprise me if they end up releasing him. You've got Shamarco Thomas there to possibly fill one of those safety spots. You brought in Will Allen, who did, you know, kind of an up and down job against Detroit. I think you might need to bring in another safety. I think in free agency they're going to bring in another defensive end as well. It doesn't necessarily mean that won't be Brett Kiesel, but I'm not sure they're where they need to be along the defensive line, top to bottom, yet. But whoever it is, it's probably a stopgap, and that's a position they'll address in the draft as well. So overall, I mean, that's a long answer to your question, because there's a lot of things that they're going to have to look at. But you're going to see a lot of different faces on that defense next year.
Emotionally, how tough is it going to be on the Polamalu decision? And for you who has watched Polamalu for years, how tough is it going to be to hear that decision?
It'll be tough. I'll be honest with you. We spent a lot of time writing about James Harrison last year, and James Harrison, for as outstanding a player he was in his relatively short career, he's no Troy Polamalu. He's a first ballot Hall of Fame player. He's been the figurehead of a great defense over the last decade. Letting a guy like that go is something that will resonate with the franchise for a long time. You know, people are never going to forget Polamalu. To put it this way, it doesn't happen very often, and the Steelers don't officially retire jerseys. The only one that they have officially retired was Ernie Stotner, number 70, way back in the day. They don't issue certain numbers out to people, and the most recent, number 36, doesn't get worn anymore. Number 86 doesn't get worn anymore. 43 will be the next one in that list. You won't see another Steelers player wearing that. I think that's the highest honor the franchise can pay.
They better not be handing out 59 either. That's just a personal point of view, since I sit next to them every week.
59 is not worn either, nor should it be.
Nor should it be. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, as always. And again, when it comes time to the book, don't forget your friends.
Oh, absolutely not.
Neil Coulong, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. We'll get the reaction from Mr. Steeler in a moment, because that had to be a heartbreaking interview for you to listen to.
Painful.
Well, no, really. It had to be.
It was painful. I'm not kidding. It was painful.
Welcome to the business side of sports, my man.
Yippee. When I was a kid, all my favorite players played for the team and stayed there.
I know. I understand that completely. I mean, I'm older than you, so I know. I mean,
yes. Troy Polamalu in a different jersey, Steve, is like Rod Woodson in a Raiders jersey. Or worse yet, in a Ravens jersey. It's just not right.
Yeah, but if you want to keep playing.
I get that, and I knew it at the time, too. That didn't make me happy. There are just some guys you don't want to see leave the team no matter what. And I'm sorry. I think he earns the right to retire as a Steeler.
I understand your sentiment. I really do. Unfortunately, that might not be the reality of the situation.
No, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's not.
Yeah. Last year, if they didn't bring him back this year, I would have said, yeah, I don't blame him. You know, he can't play somebody who doesn't play. Just eats up a roster spot.
But he makes impacts every time.
No, I was talking about last year.
No, so. I know. No. I know what you mean.
He ate up a roster spot.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, having him in sweats and active is not good.
Absolutely. But where he is right now as a player, even being in the NFL this long, he's still an impact player. He's still a player that every defense has to keep an eye on where he's at. There's not too many defensive players that you actually have to watch because they can cover well, they can intercept the ball at any moment, and then they can jump over the line of scrimmage and sack the quarterback before the quarterback even realizes he snapped the ball.
Yeah, but that was him 4 years ago. That's not him this year.
Well, I still see him doing it, or at least attempting it anyway. That's good enough for me.
He's good this year, not great.
Agreed.
Okay. And this is a guy that I think has had a great career. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a Ford Explorer XLT, perfect for a family of four, just $21,998. 2010 Ford Focus, great one-owner vehicle, $12,599. 2008 Jeep Liberty Limited, just $18,994. A beautiful Lincoln Mark LT, new brakes and tires, only $28,495. And a like-new 2012 Ford Mustang Boss, as fast as it looks, lowest price promise, just $44.99. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with the Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive and see what your trade is worth, too, at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Little Phil Collins on this Wednesday. Love Phil.
I would like everybody to see them lose that number, by the way. If he did,
what
if,
number?
If Troy Polamalu does happen to be not become a Steeler anymore, I'd like to see him lose that number.
Well, and he said if he goes, I mean, they're not going to give anybody 43. Which is something they've consistently done. They've consistently not given numbers out. They have only retired one number, but they won't give certain numbers out. You know, 59 hasn't been worn. 75 hasn't been worn. You know, I mean, this, you know, 32 hasn't been worn. You know.
I mean, I realize there's a finite amount of numbers at positions, and that's one of the problems in football, retiring jerseys.
Actually, that's been expanded because they now have allowed the 1 through 19s to be used. Okay? So, I mean, that's helped get more into the pool. That's one of the reasons why they did it. But, I mean, these are the tough business decisions that have to be made. And I know you hate the business of the sports and so forth, but guys go for a period of time and they make more money, make more money, make more money, make more money. Well, suddenly, you know, you may make so much that it ties the hands of everybody in the organization.
But why is it that nobody says, well, maybe we should go to Troy and say, Troy, listen, we'd love to have you retire as a Steeler. Here's what we're going to do. We'll give you a contract. We can't pay you what we're paying you now, but here's what we can do. You can retire as a Steeler. We'd love to have you stay on even and coach the secondary in the future.
That's your heart talking. The reality is he wants to keep playing, and somebody's going to give him more money to play.
Yeah, well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe he's to the point where he realizes that, you know, last year I spent a lot of time, as you said, in sweats. You know, this year I've had a good year. Maybe I want to end on a high note. Maybe I want to phase myself out and start bringing players along to replace me.
People don't usually think that about themselves.
Yeah, you're probably right.
People usually think they still have a little bit more left in them, that they're not quite done yet. That's human nature, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right. By the way, Matt McGloin will be the starter for the Raiders this week. There is a quarterback controversy in Oakland.
And you started it.
Very proud of that fact.
Yeah, it's a big moment for you. Final half hour coming up from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Final half hour is an open line at 800-795-9565. And Kevin brought up an interesting topic about the old days when, if you were a Baltimore Orioles fan, for example, you knew you were going to have Boog Powell, Davey Johnson, Mark Belanger, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, Paul Blair, Andy Etcheverry. You're going to have those same guys every single year. Your rotation probably was going to be the same unless you made a trade and picked up a Mike Cuellar. You're going to have Dave McNally. You're going to have Jim Palmer. And no matter what. So if you're an Orioles fan, that's what you expected every single year. That was your team unless you made a deal to change it up. If you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, you knew every year you would have Jack Ham, Jack Lambert, Joe Green, L.C. Greenwood, Dwight White, Mike Wagner, Mel Blunt, and so forth. You knew you were going to have those guys every single year. And that's how you count on your team, unless you made a move or did something in the draft somewhere along the line. And Kevin makes a great point. Do you like today's system of free agency? Where, let's face it, if you're down and out, maybe you can make a move and you can restock quickly, or do you like the way things used to be?
I'll tell you what the problem with free agency the way it is now, especially in baseball, I need to have a media guide in spring training to figure out who all these guys are and where they came from. Because I swear half the time, half the team wasn't with the team the year before.
No, there's no doubt. You do have to understand. Now, most people just follow their team now anyway, and this is something we've talked about before.
I'm guilty of that.
I think that's the way most people are now. That's why, for example, I brought up the example before of Patrick McEnroe. And when I talked to Pat about his show in New York, because I've been on his show, he's been on our show. Remember, we had him on from the Australian Open.
Right.
And you know, I said to him, I said, what do you concentrate on in your show? He says, Steve, it's the Yankees, it's the Knicks, it's the Giants, it's the Jets. They don't sit there on that show and talk about Matt McGloin with the Raiders. We do because, of course, he was Penn State's quarterback last year, and it's a great story. But they don't talk about that. They talk about their teams. And, you know, so we talk a lot about the Eagles, the Phillies, the Steelers, the Pirates, you know, the Penguins, Penn State. I mean, we tried to talk about that as much as possible. Then we delve into some national things as well, like the hit by Ahmad Brooks, because that also affects what we watch all the time with the teams that we just talked about. It affects the Steelers, the Eagles, Penn State, and so forth. So we talk about the tone of the game. But people now really just follow their teams. When I was a kid, I knew everything about every team, or at least I knew something about every team. I mean, 1969 Seattle Pilots. I knew who the Seattle Pilots were. Right? They were an expansion team. And I knew they had Gene Broadbender, who was a 13-game winner. And I knew that they had Mike Hegan at first base and Don Mincher. And they had Gus Gill. And, you know, and at least they knew something about them. Gary Bell, Jim Boughton, Jerry McNerney. Those are guys that played for the Seattle Pilots. I knew who they were. There were fewer teams then, but I followed everybody. Now I think most people just follow their team, which I completely understand because I know, for me, I try to be as well-rounded as I can in this show so I can talk about a variety of teams. But still, we all just lock in on our team. So do you like the new system or the old system? Let's go to Roger. Hi, Roger.
I like the old system, but you have to think about how different, and you actually just kind of hit on it, how different things were, let's say, back in the days of the Steel Curtain. And a lot of players were their own agents back then. And, you know, Andy Russell was telling us stories a week or two ago when he was in town about how when he first made the Pro Bowl, he went out to dinner with the other Pro Bowl linebackers like Sam Huff and Ray Nitschke and found out how much more money they made as opposed to how much money he made. And he'd go back to Art Rooney, and Art Rooney would say, it's not my fault the owners don't know how to pay. That's not my fault. And, you know, so that would be the end of the conversation. And also you were talking about the, you know, a guy like Andy Russell might make $30,000 and a guy like Sam Huff might make $75,000 or $80,000. So you're talking about, you know, a $50,000 bump. And today you can go from making $400,000 or $500,000 to making $4 million or $5 million in 1 year, you know, relatively easy if you're good enough. And back then, because the wages were more pedestrian, they had other jobs. They got done playing football in January, February, then they went to work, maybe teaching school, maybe selling insurance. I mean, they had to work year-round. So it wasn't as simple as just moving up and becoming a Buffalo Bill or a Green Bay Packer for the sake of getting a bump in your pay scale, because you might have other work in Pittsburgh or wherever you happen to play that, you know, kept you rooted there in that community. And when you talk about the ability to restock teams through free agency, well, back then you had guys like George Allen who would use draft picks to restock their team. They couldn't go out and spend lavishly on free agents, so they would just trade away next year's number one and number two for whatever veterans they felt they needed to restock the team. The Redskins, the Rams, one time I think had a trade where seven players went one way or the other, and they eventually called them the Ramskins.
Right, that was the Jack Pardee. That was the Jack Pardee, Myron Patios deal. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Yep. The whole "That's where the future is now" concept was born. So, I think as a fan, I like those days because I think if you're a Steelers fan, it was great to be able to hang on to an Andy Russell. I mean, today, imagine trying to afford Andy Russell and Jack Lambert and Jack Ham as your three linebackers. And oh, by the way, Mel Blunt in the secondary, and your front four is Holmes, Greenwood, Elsie Greenwood, Dwight White, or Ernie Holmes, and Joe Green. I mean, imagine keeping those guys together. You couldn't do it. So I think as a fan, those were the good old days.
Well, you know, don't you find it a little hard, though, like in baseball or football now, to go and buy a jersey? Or, you know, it used to be you could say, well, I love this player. This is my favorite player. But it's really hard to have a favorite player now because you never know where they're going to be next year.
Well, I think the Phillies fell in love with Cliff Lee quickly. Lee won when he came to him in midseason and was a rock star, helped get him to the postseason and regained his Cy Young form, and then he's gone. But I don't think it ended the love affair that Philly fans had with Cliff Lee. And then when he came back, you know, for a little less money than he would have made as a Yankee, I mean, Cliff Lee is going to be a Philly favorite for life. Cliff Lee can do no wrong from here on out that will, you know, pull down any affection the Philly fans have for Cliff Lee.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think I'm with you, Roger. I miss the old days where you knew year to year who you had, and then if you made a deal here and there to change the dynamics of your team, maybe you've now improved your shot of doing it. I know what Jack made when he played with the Steelers, because he's told me what he made. And, you know, let's face it, on the open market today, Jack Ham in his prime would have been worth millions and millions of dollars.
Sure, in
today's market, and could have moved around and done whatever. But you look what's interesting with the Steelers. Andy Russell still lives there. Jack still lives there. Mike Wagner still lives there. Mel Blunt still lives there. Lynn Swann still lives there. They all live around each other that are still a part of the community. And I think with the transitional basis that we have today, you don't have that community feel anymore.
Nope.
You know, I mean, you just don't have it. I'm with you. I miss the old days as to how it was done as opposed to now, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you. Thanks for letting me share my 2 cents.
I appreciate it, Roger. 800-795-9565. Did you like the old days, or do you like the new way of doing things? I tell you right now, Albert Pujols, I think, has been able to put the brakes on some things. And that's why when you look at Robinson Cano, who would like a 10-year, $300 million deal, there is no way on the planet he's getting a 10-year, $300 million deal. And there's a guy that you would think that came through the Yankee system that in the old way of doing things, and look, I am not for the reserve clause where you're locked in your contract forever and so forth, you know. But at the same time, you know, I miss the fact that, you know, like, I mean, I just named the Baltimore Orioles from the 1960s, okay, and the Seattle Pilots from 1969. I'm not a fan of either team, but I could recite their lineup.
I think fans are more loyal to their team than the players are.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, let's take, for example, the Red Sox just won the World Series. Jacoby Ellsbury was drafted by the Red Sox, came up through their system, wasn't a long trip, by the way, through their system, and has been a part of two of their three World Series championships. Okay? But he's not going to be a member of the Red Sox next year. Idealistically, I mean, the Red Sox would love to keep him. Fabulous leadoff hitter, can hit with some power, awesome speed, makes plays in the outfield, the whole deal. He's exactly, you know, perfect for them moving forward and should be idealistically part of the organization for the next 5 to 8 years. But he's not going to be a member of the team next year.
You know, it's funny. In the 70s, I was obviously a Steelers fan because everybody was at that point. But I was also a Pirates fan.
Everybody around here was.
And none of my friends were Pirates fans. They were all Phillies fans. Mm-hmm. So I'd trade for all the Pirates cards and give them all my Phillies cards. And then a third baseman came out by the name of Mike Schmidt and started playing. And at that point, when I started watching him, which really wasn't until the late 70s, early 80s when I really started to watch him because I was playing third base as a little leaguer, then I became a Phillies fan because of that. I could always count on Mike Schmidt being there. But let me get, now put that into today. You have Ryan Howard come in. Ryan Howard came in with a lot of fanfare. You know, he's going to be the big-time hitter. If he wouldn't have signed the long-term contract, he was going to be gone in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is now with the long-term contract, now you've got a guy that isn't performing the way you thought he would, and now you're paying a lot of money to keep a guy in a Phillies uniform. So I see the other side of that, too.
Right. 800-795-9565, 800-795-9565. Well, David Ortiz is a perfect example. 2 years ago, he got off to a lousy start. In fact, he had back-to-back years where he got off to lousy starts at the plate, and people were wondering whether he'd still be around with the organization. Well, he's not only still with the organization, he's a big reason why they won the World Series this year, and he's going to be back with the team next year. And he is the continuity. He is the one player that's been a part of all three championships. That in part endears him to the fan base. Now, as for the jersey part, I am still confused why you would buy a jersey with somebody else's name on the back.
Well, the point, all right, here's why. Because it was my favorite player.
Okay.
All right. That's hard to find now. The favorite player thing is hard to find because your favorite player, when he's with your team, maybe, you know, let's just say, for example, Chase Utley. You know, it's your favorite player as a Philly. But mm-hmm. next year, Chase Utley may be with the Mets. Is he still your favorite player, even though he's on one of your rival teams? It's hard to buy the jersey of your favorite player now because he may not be there next year.
Why don't you just buy the team jersey?
It's not as fun. He's your favorite player. What I'm saying is your favorite player moves around now, whereas your favorite player, for me, growing up in the 80s, especially, was Mike Schmidt. He didn't go anywhere.
Oh, see, I never had a favorite
player. That's what I mean. Well, it was only he started becoming my favorite player because obviously he could hit, but he was also a third baseman like I was in Little League.
Right. And by the way, a great fielder.
Much better fielder than myself.
But a great fielder. I mean, I always thought that Brooks Robinson was the best third baseman ever, but as soon as I saw Mike Schmidt, I completely changed my mind. Hit with more power. Hit in the postseason the same way Brooks Robinson did. They could field every bit as well as he could.
But in 1980, I wouldn't have thought twice about buying a Mike Schmidt jersey and wearing it. Now, I'm afraid to buy any jersey of a new player that comes up with any team, for that matter, because I don't know where they're going to be next year.
Well, that's incorrect. No, that's incorrect, because the rules state they have to be with them. There's a period of time when they're younger they have to be with you.
No, I'm exaggerating.
You're going to have them for 5 years.
I'm exaggerating to a point, but you just don't know where they're going. Like Dominic Brown. I think he's going to be a really talented player. I like watching him play. I'd love to have his jersey, but I'm not sure if he's going to be a Philly that long before something happens where he becomes a free agent or he gets traded or, you know.
Well, he still has a couple more years before he's eligible.
He does.
Go into the pool. I mean,
but
I'm
you
not
understand
here
what I'm
sell,
saying.
I'm not trying to sell Dominic Brown jerseys, but.
But you understand what I'm saying, though. It's not like you can't sit there and feel confident that he's going to be a Philly forever.
No. But the difference between me and you is I would never even think about buying
his jersey. It wouldn't bother you, I know.
I mean, it's not my bag. I think back, let me put it this way, in the 60s and into the 70s, you could have bought... You mentioned the Mike Schmidt jersey, 1980. You could have bought the Mike Schmidt jersey, and you would have been confident he'd be there the entire time. You'd be confident, for example, that no matter what, Frank Robinson, he got traded from Cincinnati to Baltimore, but that, he's going to be there for a while. Okay. Carl Yastrzemski would have played his whole career with the Red Sox. Thurman Munson, if the tragedy hadn't happened to him in 1979, probably would have played his entire career with the Yankees. I mean, certain things that you can have. Mickey Mantle was a Yankee forever. And so, you could have been confident of those things back then. You can't be like that now. And then you look at an Albert Pujols. The Cardinals wouldn't re-sign him because they didn't want to tie their hands for 10 years and have all that money invested in one player. Okay? Well, now... look at the Angels. They're now invested all in one player, and their hands are tied, and the Cardinals... So this thing is... There's this balance that... I think it's all been out of balance in sports for a long time with the freedom of movement. And the desire of people to get whomever to, let's rent this guy for a few months. The Red Sox rented a shortstop, Stephen Drew, for a season. $9.5 million. They'd like to have him back, but they're going to get him back. No. The Red Sox have won 3 championships in 10 years. They've had 3 different shortstops. Okay.
I understand why McCutchen jerseys sell well, because they know they're got him until 2018.
Well, he signed a 5-year deal. I think and he was still in that window where he could stay year after year after year. They're signing him to that kind of deal. Smart. It was good for McCutchen. It was good for the Pirates. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Memories like the corners of my mind.
Frank Sinatra next hour. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. Again, what system... do you, the fans, prefer the one now? I mean, which you may love, but it's not what I grew up on, and I prefer the older system, maybe with a couple of modifications.
One thing you did mention, though, that I have to admit I do like about this system is if your team is awful, you do have an opportunity to make changes and change things up from being worse to first in a year now.
Yeah, but you have to be smart with how you do it.
Very true.
And you have to be lucky with how you do it. Okay? The most recent worst-to-first scenario is the Boston Red Sox. First of all, they changed managers. I think that really helped. And then after that, they brought in players with a different pedigree. Stephen Drew to play shortstop. Johnny Gomes in left field. John Lackey finally rehabbed and was ready to go after Tommy John surgery. You look at them. They kept some of the old stalwarts like Ortiz, Pedroia, Ellsbury, Saltalamacchia. whom they'll probably lose this time as well. But they changed the dynamics of their team. You can do that. And they all, you know, and Mike Napoli, obviously. They got rid of $250 million and then reinvested it in a bunch of players that knew how to win. Voila. I mean, who's the big name in that free agent group? There is no big name in that free agent group. They just went for guys that fit what they wanted to do.